Well, it's good to be back with all of you. I was blessed to reconnect last week with a number of our UMB women at our Daring Greatly Women's Retreat, which was, as usual, awesome. The redwood trees, the food, the sacred energy of the land of Medicine Buddha, the music of Christy Mattel, but most importantly, the company of the daring and authentic women of Unity of Monterey Bay. So thank you, ladies. It was an awesome time. Prior to that, of course, I was in heaven, visiting my daughter Bree and family, Salvador, my son-in-law, and my grandsons, Mateo and Joaquin. I'm not sure there's a greater blessing than knowing that your child, your daughter, or your son is married to the right and perfect person. It's just an amazing blessing. And witnessing their joint commitment to making their family and the world a better place. And just don't get me started on my grandsons. I leave it to say, these visits are always a time of rejoicing and renewal. And I want to thank Dan and Michelle and our music and platform teams and all of you for holding the high watch so that I can take these times and reconnect and reground myself. Both Dan and Michelle's downstairs doing Children's Church, and Dan, but I just know they hear our appreciation and my appreciation. Just before I left, I introduced the focus of this quarter, which continues with our 2016 theme, generosity. We're building on last quarter's concentration on practicing the generosity of faith to explore practicing generosity in enoughness. And as we cited today, we have a new affirmation. Let's join with it again. Grounded in God as source, I practice and share in the abundance of enoughness. Since everything we are and do is grounded in our faith, it's important that we remind ourselves that in unity, faith is not only about trusting in God's good or the universe's bias for good, but even more significantly, faith represents the inherent spiritual power to shape our world according to our perceptions and beliefs. In other words, we use our faith to consciously and mindfully align our thoughts, our words, and our actions with God's good. In essence, with the ever-expanding, ever-unfolding, upward, progressive movement of life. And in that way, we help co-create God's good in the world. I also want to reiterate what I shared about a month ago, that I believe that this arena of prosperity and enoughness and sustainability and all that it entails is the growing edge of both our human and our spiritual consciousness. In that, sustainability is now a material and existential threat to life as we know it. And of course, we also know that anytime there's a threat, we have what appears to be a threat, we have an amazing opportunity. And if you really want to engage in that opportunity, be sure to join us on our Wednesday night class, because we're going to be exploring and digging deep into these topics. The question facing us is, will we respond to this opportunity with a forced fear-based reaction, letting life happen sort of to us and us being in reaction to it, to the outer circumstances and events that are going on around us, or will we respond with conscious love-based creation? The choice is always ours. It's that simple, though that doesn't mean it's easy. In my decade-plus exploration of prosperity teachings, attempting to find teachings that I felt I could integrate with the spiritual principles with our 21st century experience and realities, I've identified some good questions. Questions like, what is the true meaning and experience of spiritual abundance? What is that really all about? For years, it was, the secret and attracting new cars and bigger houses and better jobs and such. But is that really what spiritual abundance is about? Does it involve focusing on our power to manifest, like perhaps in manifesting sufficient clean water and air, food, wealth, comfort? For example, could we change the direction of climate change with enough faith in our creative capacity, enough focused prayer? Or does it involve releasing our attachments to material stuff and to evolving higher realms and vibrations of consciousness? I'm guessing it's some combination of all of those things. As I reflect and meditate on these questions, especially the ones around manifestation, however, I wonder what would guide us to the highest and best manifestations, especially considering we haven't been great at perceiving hidden consequences in our actions up to now. I ultimately, however, come back to the most foundational guidance I know of for these questions and for life in general, which is, what would love do now? What would love do now? It's always a grounding question, and whether or not we're trying to figure out what we're going to do in our material world, what actions we're going to actually take, or how we're going to center our spirituality, that question is always one that centers me. And it's always one that helps me know I'm going in the right direction. I've also found that it's useful to follow the insightful adage, think globally, act locally, when addressing this subject. When we get too involved in the global aspect of it, we can become easily overwhelmed by the magnitude of these issues, and it begins to feel like life really is happening to us. And that can force us to try to change the outer circumstances and conditions rather than remembering that life actually happens through us. And that's what brings us back to the local aspect of being mindfully conscious of our own beliefs, our own attitudes, our own perceptions, thoughts, and resulting actions, as well as their creative capacity. In essence, it brings us back to living from the inside out. Being mindfully aware of the global state of affairs, what is in the outer, provides us with feedback and a reminder, again, that opportunity to check our own consciousness so that we do not conform to the world of appearances, but instead consciously renew our minds to align with the truth as we know it. In essence, to ask in each moment, what would love do here? For me, that suggests continuing to evolve in spiritual consciousness while at the same time practicing love and caring in and for our material world and all the life forms and beings in it, which clearly at a minimum requires a shift from indulging in excessive material consumption to embracing the generosity of enoughness, which is the journey we're embarking on. In my ongoing exploration of enoughness as a spiritual principle, I came across a thoughtful treatise by the late John M. Templeton Jr., Thrift and Generosity, The Joy of Giving. Dr. Templeton was a pediatric surgeon until he retired to become president and chairman of the Templeton Foundation, which had been founded by his father, Sir John Templeton, in 1987. The Templeton Foundation has been a big supporter of Unity throughout the years. In fact, Sir John was involved in Unity. This multi-billion dollar foundation awards grants mainly to universities and scholars, giving an annual $1.7 million Templeton Prize to honor, in its words, a person who has made exceptional contributions to affirming life's spiritual dimension, whether through insight, discovery, or practical works. That's an exciting thing that there's individuals and foundations that are supporting our spiritual evolution. I know years ago when we got a radio grant here and we were first put our radio spots on CaveWave, that grant came from the Templeton Foundation. So they're a really powerful group and they have amazing, just Google Templeton Foundation, you see all the different ways they're exploring spirituality. So over the next few weeks, we're going to explore the local or personal practicalities and virtues of thrift and generosity, as well as the power of what happens when we practice them together, as discussed by Templeton and others. So Templeton begins by grounding his discussion within the stated purpose of seeking an inner state of joy. He names that as sort of a common goal that all human beings seem to experience, to desire. And he defines it as a state of mind or being that dwells in the depths of the soul and implies a degree of contentment too strong and secure to be influenced by the changing circumstances of our lives. Now, he distinguishes such joy from the pursuit of happiness, which he suggests tends to be a response tied to outer circumstances, making it impermanent and somewhat shallow. While the semantics can be debated, some people think of happiness as the deeper thing, some people call it joy. The reality is, what we're talking about is that spiritual dimension. The distinction of the inner and outer grounding is one we can embrace as central to our overall understanding of spiritual prosperity, meaning that it goes beyond the material realm, though it doesn't necessarily discount it. Today, we're going to explore the idea of thrift in the lesson I've entitled, Waste Not, Want Not. I find it to be a very appropriate Mother's Day lesson for me, since thrift was a virtue that my mom both fully embodied and also instilled in our family. I'm sure many of you can relate to some of these same lessons, but to this day I use a spatula to get every last bit of mayonnaise or peanut butter out of a jar. I squeeze the toothpaste tubes till they're totally deflated. I have three partially used up, almost gone ones on my sink, and I won't throw them out until every last ounce is gone. And maybe this is too much sharing, but I feel guilty if I use too much toilet paper. My mom taught us all how, you know, you only need this many pieces and how you can fold it and all of those things. My kids still laugh about that. She also taught me to make my own clothes, to do household repairs, and to reuse public restroom paper towels that I dried my hands with to wipe down the sink counter before I threw them away. In essence, the complementary value of always leaving a place cleaner than you found it. I texted my daughter Bree about this topic and asked her for some of her memories and my mom's thrifty influence on her, and she sent me a pretty long text. She added to the list composting, which my mom was doing in the 60s, and Bree is doing now in Cincinnati. She doesn't have a garden, but she's composting. I mean, she only has a little patch of a garden out front, but she, for her birthday, we bought her a second composter because she'd filled up one. She just, I think it just, she says it makes her feel connected to the earth, that we're learning about is a really important thing to do. She also remembered washing the disposable plastic plates at every family dinner. Plates that were supposed to be thrown away, but my mom kept for like 10 years and had the kids washing them every year. She also really honored her inventive reuse of things. As she said, she was the original Real Simple. How many of you know the magazine Real Simple? Well, my daughter loves that magazine. She says my mom was the original Real Simple inventor, which she was indeed. I could do a whole lesson on her multiple innovations. She taught me that I could do anything, and she taught me how to do much of it. She was an amazing woman, and I'm so grateful. So, love you, Mom. Templeton suggests that thrift is largely forgotten virtue in our modern society. In a lot of the articles I read, they said if you're over 40, you still have some connection. My daughter's just turned 37, and so my mom had some influence on her. But as sociology professor Joshua Yates suggested, in the ears of the contemporary world, the idiom of thrift registers as a relic from a bygone age, similar to words like chastity and temperance. By most empirical measures, the practice of thrift is going the way of powdered wigs and dueling. And yet, Yates, who writes for Big Questions, which is a another program of the Templeton Foundation, and he's a professor at University of Virginia, he suggests we are living at a moment when the practices of restraint, habits of delayed gratification, and conventions of wise use and prudent investment have never been more critical to both individual and collective well-being, but also never more in question. More than simply practical habits devised for times of scarcity, Yates explains that thrift, he agrees with Templeton in this, is an important virtue. And he points out that thrift originally referred to the condition of thriving. And throughout its history, thriving has been the subtext of thrift. Perhaps we would recognize it more today when we talk about sustainability. It's that same kind of like core value. So within this understanding of thrift, it moves beyond the concept of simply more or less to raise and instead raises fundamental questions about the ends of economic life, or as I propose, of life in general. In essence, it's a discerning more or less of what and for what purpose. In this way, thrift brings us face to face with the most fundamental question for our society. What does it mean and take to thrive? Not only economically, but humanly and spiritually as well. It's very similar to the question I posed at the beginning. What is spiritual abundance? Because for me, spiritual abundance is about thriving. But what does that look like? Within this context, the virtue and practice of thrift may serve as a truly transformative purpose for our world. But that's another discussion, too deep to address now. Maybe we'll go into it a little more in second hour, and surely we will in our prosperity class. What I want to do now is to conclude by bringing that topic of thrift back to the personal and local. In essence, what thrift attributes might we embrace for our own transformative purposes? Now, admittedly, Templeton takes some license with his expansive description of thrift. And you could clearly recognize his generation as he talked about it. There's a lot of Ben Franklin in there about the virtues of thrift. But many of the underlying attributes that he ascribes to the virtue, as well as the benefits, like the inner contentment he talked about being the purpose of life, are fundamentally spiritual in nature. He starts with the idea that genuine thrift is rooted in the philosophical understanding that life is a gift to be explored and enjoyed, by which he means that thrifty people are out in the world living life fully, being good stewards of their talents, exercising their gifts, and using their resources, working, thinking, learning, creating, and sharing, making the most of what they've been given, which applies, of course, to more than material goods. The wise and effective use of our time and talent is perhaps even more relevant to making the most of what we've been given. One could easily argue that our obsession with material stuff has too often robbed us of the more priceless gift of time. As one author put it, making enough money to build houses with rooms we never use and cars with engines we have no need of has meant wasting endless hours at work, which has resulted in us having, on average, one-third fewer friends than our parents' generation. What a waste. And that brings us to the most practical and spiritual aspect of thrift, an underlying attitude of gratitude and its correlation of avoiding wastefulness. It could easily be said that thrift is the opposite of waste, wastefulness being a toxic habit that we in our world can no longer afford. Templeton concludes, those who are grateful will be good stewards of their possessions. They will continually be mindful of the value of things that they have and how these things can be used to benefit others, which is the perfect segue to the practice of generosity, which is our topic for next week. Namaste.